It's time for the Access of Easy podcast, the weekly technology digest that keeps you ahead of the curve. Brought to you by EasyDNS.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Access of Easy podcast. This is number 363. The latest and greatest data breach and overreach. And my name's Joey. That's Len. Buddy, are you ready for the monkeypox lockdowns?
We're kind of calling this, right? Like, this, is this something that's truly shocking to you, right? You know, there had to have been something in order to enable one of the candidates to win, right? You needed, and so come on. This wasn't in the back of your mind. This was one of the alternate realities that was going to play out.
Which timeline are we in? When did we hit the warp to get into this timeline? What happened? This is when, I guess, when the shot missed Trump, right? That's when the realities split.
So if you think about it, the guy he was shot at, he has judges going after him. We'll be talking about today. He has Iranian hackers going after his campaign websites. Yeah. So the guy is clearly a target domestically and abroad, and a threat to a lot of people out there.
I'll say
he only has one term left. Could you imagine once he gets in, he's got nothing to play for to win again?
No, he's right? he's going to be I think a good president. I mean, I think he was a good president last time too, to be honest with you. But there's a lot of people who disagree with me. Some of them have guns. Other ones have communicable diseases. So anyway, the quote of the week last week: the trials we endure can and should introduce us to our strengths. That was from Epictetus. Trevor got it. Congratulations, Trev. And this week's quote: because gold is honest money, it is disliked by dishonest men. Oh, I really like that. I really like that. If you know who that was by, no Googling. You have to use your Encarta encyclopedia CD-ROMs to figure out who that was by. Put it in the comments. First person gets their next round of renewals on EasyDNS, which you cannot beat. Len, we got some funny stories today. Should we start, though, with this Trustpilot review that Mark got from a guy who tried to scam people?
How stupid is this guy? You know, some clown decided to put a one-star review for EasyDNS on Trustpilot.com, as you mentioned. And without saying the name of this jabroni, he writes that EasyDNS is a scam company. They took my payment I made in crypto and blocked my account, never gave me the domain I ordered. Now they refuse to refund me too. To which EasyDNS responded, you set up a fake website that injected malware into users' browsers and hijacked their accounts, disabled 2FA, and copied their passwords. So clearly this guy was doing stuff that was against the terms of service. So, okay, he's terminated account. He paid for this in crypto. Clearly this guy was a scammer. He was trying to inject malware in the site, whatever. Like, just get this guy. Like, he's screwed his altcoiner. I don't get why people do this. Like, it's against the term of service. Act in a manner that, you know, that you wouldn't get. If this was elementary school, this guy would get his bum handed to him. I don't want to, his ass handed to him. Right? He get kicked every day. He get kicked in the head. Right? Like, yeah. It's just this guy. He's acting like a real clown. So if anything, EasyDNS has proven that they're not a scam company. They've been around for decades, and this is plural, right? They serviced countless clients, including us. Great level of support. They have solid team owner, solid team. And if you want to partner with a company about something that's so very important, such as your online presence, you want to deal with a company like EasyDNS. That's what I would say. They've been very good in this space for a long period of time. This guy, screw him. This guy is going against the terms of service, providing fake information to try to screw people over. And one-star review. I hope this thing gets wiped off Trustpilot.com. Maybe we should start a campaign to do that.
I think that it's worth mentioning, and it's in the newsletter as well, because Trustpilot sort of rates the latest reviews highly, you know, this really dropped the EasyDNS review thing, the rating. So I'm going to leave a review. You should too, if you're listening to this. I mean, I think this letter goes out to like, what I can't remember what Mark said, 20, 30, 40,000 people. It's a lot of people anyway. And if you use EasyDNS, then you should leave a review, because chances are, you know, unless you're trying to airdrop scams or malware or whatever on people, you've had a good experience with Mark and the team over there. So do that. Get these guys back up to 4 stars. I'm going to do it today. I didn't even know Trustpilot was a thing. I think I've heard it before, but I've never actually been on the website. So I'm surprised to see that more people are not using this, if this guy thought to go there first. Like, wouldn't you leave a Google review first?
Maybe he did as well, but to leave a Google review, I think you have to have a valid user account or Gmail account.
You don't want to out yourself, I guess, on the scam side of things, do you?
Yeah, correct. So that's probably his problem. And he's got to tie it to a telephone number, because I don't think you could create a Gmail account these days without verifying it through a telephone number or something like that. So he must have used a fake account to create, fake email probably, to create an account on this. So that's my guess.
Probably.
Either
probably.
Way.
Yep.
Yeah. Let's talk about Iran and
sure.
So Trump, like we talked about it, you know, this guy's under radar for a bunch of people these days. You got these New York judges, which Trump calls crooked New York judges. you have deceased brainwashed shooters. You have now Iranian hackers that are all trying to do something to him. So Microsoft, they have alerted Trump of a hack that interrupted one of his campaign websites. And Microsoft believes that the culprits behind this hack is the Iranian government, specifically an Iranian group that is connected to the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps. Luckily, the information stolen was only determined to be, quote unquote, publicly available information. So there's not much more to it than that. Iran responded by saying that they weren't behind the attack because they don't give a crap about this election or who wins it. I'm willing to bet otherwise, you know, because they're probably still pissed off from the killing of Qassem Soleimani. I think I'm pronouncing this, whatever.
Probably not, but okay.
Either way, that guy was the head of the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps back in 2020 January. So this guy, unfortunately, was offed and by the United States, and they're pissed off. Iran is. So now we have Microsoft talking about Iran trying to disrupt the Trump campaign. This stuff is likely going to escalate moving forward. November is just around the corner. A lot of people do not want this guy in power, and as a result, there's going to be a lot of new threats that are going to be coming at him from different angles. This one seems kind of low-key, going after his campaign website, but the good news is they only got like publicly available information, whatever that means. But what's next? Who knows? There's going to be some new attack coming against this guy.
I don't buy that they only got publicly available information. The only thing I can really think of is like a donor list. Is that that's publicly available, right? I think at a certain threshold, you have to report what you donated to or who your donors were. Maybe that's the information. But, you know, when we talk about whether or not Iran has skin in the game, of course they do. Every political podcast, pundit, tweet, newscast, whatever, mentions Trump's stance towards stuff like Iran, the Middle East, all these things. And Iran, obviously, a nuclear power. Now, I'm in the camp that they're not really much of a threat to the United States. I mean, these guys are, you know, by and large, sort of third world potato farmers. No disrespect, but I don't think that this is going to really affect the United States Leviathan. The interesting thing here, Len, is that Microsoft caught this, right? Is that that's the story? So, you know, Microsoft is often on this show for, you know, the wrong reasons, I would say. Do you trust that Microsoft knows the extent of the hack, the information taken, all these things? I mean, we talk about them pretty much every week for their shortcomings in security. That would be the most alarming thing to me if I was a Trump campaign guy. Not that they listen to Access of Easy, but they should, because they would know to be skeptical of this report. I think anyway, that's what I would be.
I'd like to know how to figure this out. Is it IIS? Are they using that as a web? I don't even know. Like how is Microsoft involved in this whole process?
They called 1-800-IRAN and just asked the customer service line if they had been busy busting into Trump's, you know, election campaign. And someone said yes. They were socially engineered into giving the right answer.
Could you imagine? we gotta set up an online like that.
Yeah, we should. It is curious though. Like how did they find this out? Number one. And number two, it's pretty jokes that Iran, you know, for their part is like, no, we would never do something like this. We don't care. Oh, okay. Yeah, sure you don't.
I believe
you guys. Everyone's just making stuff up.
I believe them. Anyways, let's go on the UN Cybersecurity Treaty and the United Nations Cybercrime Convention. Well, through this, there was a proposed treaty to standardize criminal legislation, standardize cyber criminal legislation, and improve international cooperations between nations with addressing cybercrime. Specifically, it provides international cooperation for combating certain crimes committed by means of information and communications technology systems, and for the sharing of evidence in electronic form for serious crimes. That's a word salad, because that's basically copied and pasted right from the treaty itself. So the treaty aims to combat serious cybercrimes, and it also raised concerns about the potential impact on privacy and individual civil liberties. So one major concern is that this could weaken existing bank secrecy laws. The convention also included provisions that allowed for broader access to financial data for law enforcement purposes. So this could work against existing protections that against unwarranted snooping around financial records. And specifically, the UNCC requires countries to criminalize a range of computer-related offenses, including unauthorized access to computer systems, data interception, and computer-related fraud. But even as this goes through, there's companies or countries that could stop this from being used on cases that they want to remain hidden. For example, in the article, it states that if the authorities of the requested state party would be prohibited by its domestic law from carrying out the action requested with regards to any similar offense. So if it has been subjected to a investigation prosecution on its own jurisdiction, then it's going to prohibit from moving forward. So essentially this can be a toothless type of scenario here, where if a country doesn't want to give any information, they could simply say, oh, we've done our own due diligence. We looked into this through our own laws, and as such, we're not going to provide any information. We're not going to go forward. So this is, it's on the surface looks great, but as you scratch it, it potentially can hide more information that is from companies or agencies that are in favor with the government that they're serving of the day. So this is going to be a big problem for civil liberties moving forward. This is a big thing for Bitcoin, in my opinion, because if you want to
tell me why, I agree. I want to know why you think that.
Well, if you want them to go snooping into your bank accounts and figuring out where money is going and all this, it's easy to do so under the legacy financial system, because we're dealing with banks that have total control of everything. Bitcoin, as long as the Bitcoin is not tied to a particular name, you can start spending it, and it's impossible to identify where it's being sent to, who sent it. And so as such, there is some anonymous transactions that are being done. That's if you're using the KYC free Bitcoin. If you're using KYC Bitcoin, it's unfortunately everything I said with respect to that doesn't apply. Mm-hmm. So my suggestion is people should learn how to use Bitcoin. People should learn how to stack KYC free Bitcoin. It only makes sense because it looks like they're going to be trying to encroach even further on people's rights and try to figure out even what's going on with the money that you're spending. And come on, like, money, it's yours to spend however you want. Why should they snoop how you're spending it, why you're spending it, and potentially even stop you spending it in the future?
I think this is like pretty significant legislation, or whatever, draft legislation, convention, whatever you want to call this. I mean, we've seen sort of directionally in the last, like, I don't know, year, 2 years, a renewed focus from state actors and non-state actors like the UN. I mean, non-state, really not the right word for that, but you get what I mean. To take down stuff like encryption services, for example. And, you know, if you look at this through that lens, you know, it's always the same kind of Orwellian doublespeak in the titles and descriptions of these conventions. You know, we're you know, doing this to prevent cybercrime. Well, if everything becomes criminal, or there's potential that something could lead to criminal activity, and the definition of criminal keeps becoming more and more broad, then eventually, yeah, you're going to have your data investigated, poked around in, and looked at by these states. And some of these things are like, some of these clauses or articles are pretty nuts, you know, like this idea that it looks like they're going to start looking at, you know, messaging and cash use and like all manner of things, because it's going to be required of these states to do so if there's any suspicion of criminal activity. And, you know, Len, how many times have we talked about on this show, for sure, probably on CBP too, as the state weakens, and as it weakens in the eyes of more and more of its citizens, constituents, whatever you want to call them, the more that the protections have to be really tightly applied and really loosely defined. And what you're seeing here is, I think, a good example of that. I'm starting to think more and more that the UN is just this this upper level body where there's a nice buffer of responsibility, a nice buffer against, I should say, states having to take responsibility for these insane laws, right? Don't you think that's what you're seeing here? Like, obviously, most member states probably agree with this, especially the Western states where these kinds of technologies like Bitcoin and other ones are becoming more prevalent, and where encryption is for sure a thorn in the side of law enforcement, you know, regardless of whether or not the enforcement or the laws are legitimate, case to case. So I think that what you're seeing here is these member states going, yeah, we want this stuff, but we don't want to be responsible for it. So we got to get this done through a UN convention. I think this happens at the WHO level. I think it happens here. I think it's happening more and more. And I think it's going to continue to happen. The thing is, people, I think, broadly still have this opinion that if you're not hiding anything, then you don't need secrecy. That's the wrong approach. And you will find that, you know, what is that old story, right? Every U.S. citizen, every citizen of a modern democracy breaks a law at least once a day, because there's just so many laws on the books. And if you become a target of the state, you will be a target of the state for the rest of your life. And you don't want that. It's, you know, it's a miserable existence, you know? And stuff like this, it just expands the power of the state and of the surveillance state specifically. It's not good. None of this is good.
No, the next one isn't really good, because the UK government, they're making headlines because of plans that are being considered by them. And these plans would force the hands of these tech companies like Meta and X and so forth.
This is nuts. This is just nuts. It is nuts. Yeah.
And this would force them to ban what they claim to be fake news on their platform. But the question is, who decides what is indeed fake news? Anyways, the UK government, they want to push these companies to deal with what is considered legal but harmful content. Like, let me just repeat that: legal but harmful content. That's what they want to ban. So the UK seems to be going sideways these days, not with just respect to what's being proposed here, but look what's going on over there in terms of all the rioting. But either way, this whole initiative is part of a review of the Online Safety Act. And although what they plan is to attack not only what isn't against the law as of yet, but they also want to revise the act to make that, you know, if you say something, you're screwed. So talking about something like asylum seekers might land somebody that just posts something in hot water. And if the discussions are not in line with what the UK government likes, well, you might just be nabbed for the post you put an X. There's already people that are getting nabbed right now, and even Americans are being extradited back home because of what they said over there. It's an absolute zoo. But this is just an absolute censorship to the nth degree, where if something is deemed to be legal, why can't you post it? Now they're saying legal but harmful. Like, who decides that? And then, like, it just doesn't make any sense to me. It could certainly be used not just for... There may be some things that you may want to that shouldn't be put online, but really, how far can this be pushed to the point where they could just say, you know what, if you're not saying something good about the government, or you're just saying something bad about a particular elected official, they could just nab you and put you away for it. And just, that's the wrong way of doing things. This is a step in the wrong direction. The UK, just look what's happened in the past 3 months since the last election. It's been going, this is just turning into an absolute zoo. I would stay away from this in totality.
I don't understand why anyone agrees with this. Who are the people who are like begging for their own demise via these laws? posting a video of a riot is not amplifying misinformation, disinformation, or something harmful. I want to know if there's a riot near me. And since the media seems unwilling to report on it, I need to go to stuff like Twitter. This happens here in Canada, it happens in the States, and it's happening in the UK. More and more people are turning to these other sources because the media refuses to look at things and report things and share things through an objective lens. That's not my problem as a citizen until they refuse to do it. And if they refuse to do it, then it's my prerogative to go somewhere where I can get the full story or the other side of the story or more of the facts. That's a shortcoming of the press. Preston Byrne, a friend of the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast, did an appearance on TV yesterday. I recommend people go watch it, about the UK freedom of speech, why they don't have it and why they need it during times like this, and why they should do whatever they can to get it. Because as you see, you know, Starmer truly, you know, proving himself to be a complete clown in a lot of ways. It's ridiculous that this person comes into power and immediately tries to censor, you know, arrest, charge, whatever. People who are, I mean, some of the stories are pretty crazy. This is a guy who got, you know, 50 weeks in jail for yelling at police during a riot. There's another guy who got, you know, 10 months in jail for throwing something during a riot. Like, during a riot or during a protest, these things happen, fine. But they're also happening on both sides of this, of the aisle here, right? Both sides of the conflict. And I'm not going to get into the details of who's on which side of the conflict, but everyone knows. Okay, there's two sides here. The videos are online. You don't see any arrests or charges being laid to the other side. And you can make of that what you will. But this idea that, you know, tech giants, as the article says, are going to be forced to take down lawful but harmful. As you mentioned, Len, harmful is becoming anything that is detrimental to the regime narrative and the regime intent. And can't have that in a modern democracy. That's not democratic. It's not fair, definitely. And, you know, ultimately people vote for leadership, but you can't just put into these, you can't put in these insane policy positions to try and get tech giants to bend the knee. If I was Musk, and he just might do this because I think he really hates Keir Starmer, I would just pull Twitter from the UK and say, I'm not coming back until you drop this nonsense and start reporting fairly. And the people in the UK would, that, like, you want to see people upset, that'll upset people. And we'll see how that goes from there. But this is, to me, insane. But, you know, is it fair to say that you and me have been saying that this is going to happen and that this has been, that we've been going this direction for a long time? We talk about it through the economic lens that soon it'll be illegal or frowned upon, or you'll get a visit from someone who represents the state when you talk about how the money is failing or inflation numbers are made up, jobs data is fabricated. You know, all these things will start happening pretty soon because it's impossible to ignore. And the only way that you can stop people from thinking this way is if you force them to stop saying it online. And I think we're less than 2-3 years away from that here, maybe less than that even.
Yeah, we'll have to go underground and the CBP.
Where do you want to go? What are you thinking? Maybe a shipping container somewhere? Starlink shipping container, all sponsors pay in Bitcoin. We pay for everything in Bitcoin. True nomad.
But how good of a life is that? You won't see the light of day.
It's terrible. It's absolutely dog shit. I know I'm not supposed to swear on this show, but like the direction things are going, it's either going to be people who never think for themselves and only repeat the things that are allowed, right? The complete graying of all opinions versus people who want to speak their mind and are, you know, demonized for it. And by the way, you know, the thing that will happen is you won't be demonized initially by the state. It'll be like COVID. You'll be demonized by your friends and family. Oh, you don't want to get the shot? Oh, you don't want a lockdown? Well, you must be extremist. Like, it'll start with that. And then when that doesn't work, because invariably it will not work for a long period of time, then the state will come down with the guns and the batons. You see that? It's the same playbook all the time. You should be concerned about this if you're living over there and if you're living over here, because we have the same freedom of speech problem here. We don't have absolute rights the same way the U.S. does. So don't get confused about that.
You ready to get swabbed for the pox?
Oh my God. Yeah, sure. Where are they going to swab me? I doubt it's going to be on my gums this time, is it?
No, bend over. It's going to be in the anus.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. So got a data breach that's going on that's affecting about 3 billion people. 3 billion. So Jericho Pictures Inc. And this is a background check company that normally operates under the name of National Public Data. I've never heard of either of these two names. Jericho Pictures, what the heck? Well, it has come out that they've been hit by a data breach. 2.9 billion people in specific, like specific numbers have been hit by this one. That's about, you know, a little bit less than half the world, quite a lot, a larger number of people. How they managed to get their information under for to create their database was very easy for them. They simply trolled the internet for freely available information, and they made a database for just about everybody that they could find. So without your consent, they were able to get this information since it was all there online. So this is a good call to action for people out there to, if they have an online presence, to not give as much information that they should. But either way, as per this article, what has been stolen here is the former and current addresses of people, social security numbers, as well as personal data tied to family members and relatives who are both living and deceased. And this was all learned through a class action lawsuit a plaintiff by the name of Christopher Hoffman. And so he's going after this. He's the 3.5, I think they're looking for a judgment here of in the billions here, but either way,
a dollar per person. Information was, doesn't seem like much, does it?
I have no idea. Let's see what he gets out of it. But either way, this was done under, like, they ended up finding this through a database called the National Public Data. It was leaked through the dark web, and they're trying to find buyers in the millions for this thing. But there is a lot of data that is available, just freely available on the internet. So it's hard to say that this National Public Data company did something in the wrong. They just simply trolled and collected information that it was available online. So this is up to you, for anybody out there that's listening or watching. Don't give your information freely. Be careful with what you talk about, who you talk to, what you say, and what information you voluntarily give up. Because if it's there, if it's in the public domain, it could be taken. And between that information and others that they collect about you, they could create a very big identity about you and figure out where you work, your social security number, all this information, your address. And what could they use this information? Well, there's a lot they could do with it. And now it's being sold or being potentially sold on the internet for millions and millions of dollars. You are the product in a lot of cases, but you are willingly the product in a lot of cases. Be very careful moving forward.
I'm going to save my comments here and defer to the comment section of the article. From Cree 700, when are these companies going to be held accountable? I don't mean by handing me a free one-year subscription to a monitoring company. I mean going to jail for 20 years. If these money bags had to pay with years instead of bucks, they would secure things fast and not do these underhanded things. Underhanded and practically illegal things. The second comment: there really is nothing that can be done. There is no way to stop or even get ahead of the hackers. The hackers are always two steps ahead. We simply can't provide honeypots and treasure troves lying around for them to exploit. These databases should be outlawed. Perfect. What else is there to say besides that? That's it. That's all there is to it.
But
there's no other fix.
I'll never have to do this show again.
Access of Easy canceled. Just remember those two things and we're done. That's it. No more podcasts, no more letter. Stop giving your information. And that's all. You're good.
Yeah. See, I'm with the idea, but in terms of this specific incident, like the company
I know.
Right? Like it's there. Anybody could still do it. They could replicate exactly what's been done. It's a lot of time and effort to do it. I'm not saying it's an easy thing to do, but it's there, right? Like
it's not as hard as it should be, though. It might not be easy, but it's not as hard as it should be. If everyone just keeps doing it, like, you know, come on.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. And now
I blame the company like 1,000%. I mean, I always do anyways, but this is, you know, a more egregious example maybe than the average.
Yeah. Let's move on to Ontario because there was a recent decision.
This is a Torstar article. Can we get an update on the Torstar stock price?
I didn't take a look at it, but I'll let you.
I'll look right now. Let's see. Torstar stock price.
The past year, it's down 70%. That's my guess.
Let's see. They don't make it easy for you to find the Torstar price here. Let's.
It hasn't been a good year for Toronto Star, and in fact, a lot of legacy media.
It's at 74 cents, and over the last 6 months, it's up a bit actually. Since this is definitely not. Oh yeah, these guys are getting absolutely.
In the past year, it's kind of flat. It was it started around 83 cents a year ago. Now it's 74 cents. Yeah. So it's down what?
10%-ish.
So that's not too bad. I thought it would be down a heck of a lot more.
They've had worse stretches.
But it's been since May, it was a 30 cents. So it's been rallying since then. So somebody's pumped. You know what? There's the election coming up. People want
to. Bruce Arthur is using his bonus to pump up the stock price.
CCBC that got millions of dollars in bonuses for
another 20 mil, right? Yeah, nice.
Something like 15 to 20. Either way, let's talk about the article at hand here, which is the Ontario Court of Appeals, and they handed down a decision on digital searches conducted by the CBSA, Canada Border Service Agency. And the CBSA previously had a blanket authority to search electronic devices at the border, even without reasonable suspicion of a crime. Two travelers challenged these searches recently and had their case heard by the Ontario Court of Appeals. So the court ruled that CBSA searches of the travel devices were unconstitutional, but there's a caveat here, but the court also ruled that the evidence obtained from the searches that they previously could still be used in court. So in one such case, the trial judge has excluded the evidence, and the court's ruling means that the case will have to be retried. And in another case, a traveler was sentenced to house arrest, but has already served more than half his sentence and will not serve any further punishment. But really what's more important here is the protection of privacy rights and recognizing that, you know, there may be a need for law enforcement to investigate crimes, but if you have no reasonable need to check somebody's device, well, you know, this is a good ruling. But I just also wanted to point out that there are options out there. Like, I have a phone that's running Graphene OS. You can run multiple profiles. You can run a profile that appears to be the one you have, and they can.
This is not advice. This is not advice. This is not advice. It's just an option.
Yeah, these are the capabilities of the phone. I'm saying what it can do. So one could certainly do that, and you could have a profile that looks like it's yours, and it may be, you know, a pseudo driver, a daily driver of yours, but in reality, it's not. And because a phone like Graphene is encrypted, to get into it requires a great deal of time and effort. So do they want to do that? Well, again, first you have to find out there's multiple profiles. Then you have to spend the time and effort to hack into it. Look into stuff like that. Like, there are options available to people. If you want to take advantage of it, certainly do it. That's my suggestion.
Okay, a couple interesting things here. The law, this is from the article, the law mostly misses the mark due to its current low threshold. He pointed out that approximately 62% of the over 31,000 searches of digital devices conducted by CBSA between 17 and 20 found no evidence of illegal activity. Does that mean 38% of the time they looked through someone's phone and found something illegal? Like I said before in the other story, everyone is breaking the law. The question is whether you know it or not, and to what degree you are breaking the law, and what law is it, and what's the mood of the agent. I mean, whether it's you bought a bunch of beer and it's in your trunk and you didn't tell anybody, or you're wearing the shirts that you bought at the military mall and took the tags off instead of paying the duty, or maybe you're bringing smokes or guns back, or maybe there's a snapping turtle in an aquarium in your trunk or something, or you're a drug runner. I don't know. But everybody has these sort of degrees of illegal activity going on in their daily lives. Everybody, me, you, everybody. Okay. 38% of people are not breaking the law to a degree that they need to have their phones swept and searched. That's a fact. Okay. So this idea that 38% of people are committing illegal activity, Toronto Star is spinning this in a way that's, I think, really friendly to the government, honestly. And that stat really bothered me. This other bit about, you know, whether or not Border Patrol can rely on their intuition to search a phone. That's like, to me, that's a low bar, of course. But part of me also says that if you go through someone's trunk and they have some stuff there that they didn't declare, are you going to search their phone?
And they might have suspicion to do that.
Exactly. So like, you know, if you find a case of beer in the guy's trunk, or the guy tells you he has 24 beers and you go back there and he's got 36, are you searching his phone? I don't know if you are or not, but the point is that
does that give them reasonable suspicion?
Even with the law, you can still search the phone. That's the problem, right? The problem is not that the law is too good or too bad, too broad, too narrow. The problem is there's a law at all that says some guy with a high school education who works at the border can open your phone if you have 12 more beers than you told him. Even if you got a truck with two kids in the back seat, your wife is sick, your kids are screaming, I got 24 beers in the back. They open it up, there's 36 in there, your phone is theirs. The phone should never be an option. at the border unless they find firearms, drugs, or animals. That's my personal opinion. You can't forget you have an animal in the car. You can't forget you have a gun in the car. And if you got drugs in the car, yeah, you're in some trouble. If you find any of those things, the phone should be open season. But anything else, the phone just cannot be in play. The phone is your personal device. It is an extension of who you are at this point, especially for people my age and younger. All my texts are in there, my banking, you know, my Twitter feed is in there with all those DMs. It's not, it shouldn't be available to CBSA, a guy or girl who ostensibly has a high school education or less in a lot of cases. It's not, I'm not saying that's the worst thing in the world to have a job like that, but this person doesn't have good intuitions. That's why they're at border security and not at a higher level. The idea that we allow people who have entry-level positions with CBSA to decide whether or not to completely uproot and upend your private life over 12 beers is ridiculous. It's ridiculous. It shouldn't be allowed. So I don't care what the Court of Appeal says. There should be no law about this. The law should be, unless you find A, B, or C, the phone is off limits. Get these people through the border. And enough is enough. It's insane to me that this is even a topic of conversation. I didn't realize this before we did this week's show. So
yeah, the crazy. Sad reality is there's always going to be some level of being subjective in terms of applying it, because you're going to set a law and then somebody's going to have to, not administer, but at least so. And because
it shouldn't be the guy in the booth. It shouldn't be the guy in the booth is what I would say.
I don't know how to get around this. What's the
I have no idea. Standard?
Because in terms of the sheer volume of people across borders, across the Canadian-US border, you're going to have, like, you know, stuff is going to pass through, obviously, but you're going to have a quick checklist and follow this suspicion. Okay, go to secondary and we'll go from there. I've been pulled to secondary before.
Same. I got when I was in teacher's college in Buffalo, I got walked across the entire border by a guy with a machine gun. That's probably scary. I was like 22, maybe. That was just one of the scariest things I had ever been through at that point. Like, this guy has an automatic weapon and he's like escorting me across the fucking whole border, swearing again. Shouldn't be doing that, especially not this early on a Friday. Because why? I think it was because I was driving my dad's car, maybe. Or like, I stuttered and when I was giving the answer. It was like 7:30 in the morning on a Monday. Like, well, of course, I'm barely awake. Crazy. What, are you telling me you have to have a guy with a machine gun? I don't know. This whole thing is nuts to me. A border security is a lot like KYC AML, where the inconveniences and misapplications are so much greater in number and completely unjustifiable given the actual number of crimes they stop. I feel very strongly about this. Anyway, that's it for Access of Easy this week. Come back next week for more fun data breaching and overreaching. And until then, take care of yourselves.
Yeah, take care.